Okay, first off, let's give a shout out to Aristarchus of Samos, one of those ancient Greek guys who was way ahead of his time, more than 1700 years before Copernicus. Aristarchus was saying that the sun was at the center of the universe. Of course, the sun isn't at all at the center of the universe, but neither is the earth, which sure seemed to the ancient Greeks to be true. It seemed like the earth was at the center. Aristarchus also said that the stars were unbelievably far away. And it's quite possible he never really imagined just how far away they really are. Aristarchus said the earth is orbiting around the sun. And so that meant when it's on one side of the sun and you look at a star, then that star is going to be seen from a different angle than when the earth is on the other side of the sun. That's called a parallax. The cheap and easy way to experience what a parallax is to just simply hold one finger up in front of your face. Then keep one eye open and close the other eye. Note the finger's position. Then reverse. Keep the finger in the same place, but close the open eye, open the closed eye, and note where the finger now appears. You can shift back and forth. That shift, that movement, the seeming movement of the finger, you're holding your finger still, but the seeming movement is called the parallax. You can measure that shift to determine how far your finger is from your face based on the position of your eyes. The thing is, the stars are so far away that the stellar parallax that Aristarchus predicted, it can't be seen with the naked eye. So people at that time just shrugged off Aristarchus, and they took the lack of evidence as an argument that said no possible shift means that the earth is not moving. The sun is what's moving. The earth must be at the center since we can't see any stellar parallax. It took a telescope and some very careful measurements to find the parallax of the star that's closest to us. Proxima Centauri is about 25 trillion miles away. That's 4.5 light years. If you're going to travel 25 trillion miles, one way to do it is to circle the Earth a billion times. That is a long way to go. If you really want to try this, I suggest you get started soon. That's the nearest star to us. The parallax shift for this star is so small, it's like trying to measure the distance across the face of a dime from about 2 miles away. So the ancient Greeks, I think, they can be forgiven for thinking that the earth was at the center. And so can all the Europeans who followed their example. What I find harder to forgive is how the world hung on to this earth is at the center story and how much trouble they gave to people like Galileo for saying otherwise. That was not cool, in my opinion. The thing is, once you observe the orbits of things like the sun and the moon relative to the earth, you can predict solar and lunar eclipses pretty accurately, even if you do think the earth is at the center of the universe. For making predictions like that, it doesn't matter what you think is at the center. What matters is the relative movements. The things observed from Earth are good enough to make many predictions. And if you think the Earth is at the center of the universe, you can still also predict pretty accurately the movements of the other planets in our system. Ptolemy had done just that. So when Copernicus was alive, the movements of the planets were already pretty accurately predicted. Copernicus never did just look through a telescope and just come to the conclusion that the sun was at the center and not the earth. You want to know what tipped him off? The math of Ptolemy's system. The math being used to describe the movements of the planets was way too complicated. For example, when somebody says Mercury is in retrograde, that's because Mercury appears to move backwards across the sky for a time, every once in a while. Retrograde movement is kind of like being in a train at the station. You're parked on your train. You're not moving, but the train on the next track starts moving. And then you feel like you're moving, but you're not. That only happens when you're observing the orbits of other planets from the Earth. If the Earth were at the center, there wouldn't be retrograde. So Copernicus recognized that Ptolemy's system was not based on a unifying principle. It was all patched together backwards. The math was made to try to fit all the observations like retrograde. If you observe the planets from the sun, just kind of like you observe two trains from above, then which train is moving is very clear. From the sun, this retrograde movement never happens. So all Copernicus did was change the assumption. He assumed the sun was at the center and not the Earth. And then he calculated all the movements of the planets, and lo and behold, the math became really simple. No more complicated equations. No more retrograde. And there's a couple of things too nerdy to mention. Ptolemy had to use these tricks to make everything work. But now, with the sun at the center, everything made sense. So Copernicus wrote his paper. He explained the whole thing. And then he died later that year. So he didn't have to deal with any flack for his views. There was a guy named Bruno later, and of course, Galileo, who got most of the flack for taking Copernicus's ideas and running with them. Galileo just wanted others. Look through the damn telescope, see for yourself. The Earth is not at the center, but it was just too big a shock for the world view at the time. The Earth got its central position in the universe because humanity was at the center of God's creation. Everything was woven together in a coherent system. Moving the Earth, rethinking where the Earth is, wasn't just an adjustment to account for the math of the planets. It could never be something to be accepted just because it made sense. Believing the Earth was not at the center was a demotion of humanity itself. What do you think? We're not at the center of everything? You think, what do you think? We're just another planet orbiting an ordinary star? Well, yeah, it sure looks that way. So it's not hard to understand why institutions like the church felt quite threatened by this new point of view. Of course, you may think this is strictly an historical event, this huge blow to the Earth-centric psychology of the Western mind at the time. But I think, in a way, we're still struggling with this. The first thing that comes to mind is Universal Pictures, a movie company. They wrap their title around the Earth as if the universal is somehow centered on the Earth. The Copernican Revolution was a good start. But the revolution that began with Copernicus needs to continue. It needs more support. How can you support the Copernican Revolution? Well, that's what I want to talk about today. Hello, and welcome to the 10 Crutches podcast. My name is David. I'm glad you're here. As Kurt Vonnegut once wrote, the universe is a big place, perhaps the biggest. The ancient Greeks did know the Earth was round, but still, they took the Earth to be at the center of the universe. As kids, we all think we're at the center. Even as adults, we may theoretically recognize we're not at the center, but there's many times we at least feel like we are. We still, at least at times, act as if we're at the center. The way being at the center shows up these days is that we have come to think that human consciousness can be found completely between our ears. It comes completely from the matter in our brains. We keep looking at the world as if consciousness needs to prove itself to us. Kind of like there's some recent discoveries that plants may be conscious. Just maybe, but all matter is conscious. From rocks to plants to animals to humans to other forms of life, possibly angels, spirits, there's a whole continuum. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to Itzhak Bentov's book, Stalking the Wild Pendulum. His book provides an excellent and pretty accessible model of the universe that has consciousness running all the way through it. We have this way of looking at the universe as if we are the only intelligent ones. Somehow it makes sense to us to ask, is there intelligent life on other planets? But we can hardly communicate with the intelligent life that's already on this planet. What do you need, a whale to arrive in a spaceship for us to consider it intelligent? How about an ant colony? All those little ants. Each ant is like a neuron. The intelligence is in the colony as a whole. There is clearly an intelligence in the actions of an ant colony, clearly an awareness. But how is a self-centered human going to communicate with it? Just because we can't doesn't mean the intelligence isn't there. The mechanistic view of the universe, this view that we are made of mindless parts, consciousness-free atoms and molecules, which make consciousness-free proteins, etc., etc. And then, just for us humans, all of a sudden, intelligence just suddenly emerges from this mindless stuff. Alan Watts, he has a great quote. Shatter the myth of the fully automatic universe where human consciousness and intelligence are a fluke in the midst of boundless stupidity. The boundless stupidity is all this dead matter, all these unintelligent, unconscious atoms and molecules. Well, that's my interpretation of Frankenstein, by the way. I think Shelley was responding to the loss of this pantheistic point of view, the view that all of the universe is alive and intelligent. It was really losing ground in the 1800s when she wrote Frankenstein. It's like she was asking, all right, you think life can come from dead matter? Well, let's imagine a doctor who can pull it off and see how it goes for him when the dead thing comes to life and asks him the same questions that we ask of God. The whole idea of a universe that's made of insentient matter, there's some reasons to believe that this was just a way to escape the idea that an all-pervasive God is watching us all the time. God is omniscient. God sees everyone, sees everywhere. And people just didn't want to be under observation all the time. So we reinvented the myth of the universe and we said, okay, God is not watching us. There is no God. God is dead, but too bad. I guess then all the rest of the universe is dead as well. And we funny little monkeys that we are the only intelligent ones. Well, this is just as stupid as imagining the Earth is at the center of the universe. It's just as obvious, but in the face of evidence, it's just as stupid. And then fighting to make it true when the evidence suggests otherwise? Well, I'll leave it for you to label what that is. Speaking of Alan Watts, in one of his books, he uses an example of a cat walking by a fence. You're on the other side of the fence, and you can see the cat through a hole in the fence. This is an example of what our limited perception means, the slowness of our perception. It doesn't allow you to see the whole cat at the same time. The cat walks by, but you see the head, and then later on you see the tail, and you might not realize it's all part of one cat. In a similar way, we cannot see, for example, both good and evil at the same time. It takes some training to recognize good and evil are different aspects of the same creature. Another example is birth and death. We forget birth and death are of the same creature. If you've ever studied anything about Jean Piaget, you'll know about the example of the balls of clay. If you've never heard of it, it's totally fascinating. You make two balls out of clay using the same amount of clay, the exact same amount, show them to a child, and if that child's of a certain age, I think the first stage is like 3 or 4, you tell the child, you establish the balls have the same amount of clay, and then you roll one ball out into a log. You don't add anything, you don't take anything away. The child is actually going to believe that since the log looks bigger than the ball, it must have more clay. You cannot argue or persuade a child at this stage otherwise. Their perception is not subject at that time to a rational analysis. It's totally fascinating. As the child grows and they grow out of that stage, they reach another stage, usually around 4 or 5, I believe. And they come to see that the two balls actually do have the same amount of clay since you didn't add or subtract, but they will still think that the log weighs more than the ball of clay. Even though they'll tell you it has the same amount, they'll tell you also that it weighs more. I think we are all more or less like kids at some stage of human development, and not everyone realizes that tiles and pebbles are sentient beings as well as us. We are not alone in our intelligence, and it's the optical illusion of our perceptions that makes us think that way. It's the way our cognition develops. Just like we thought the Earth was at the center, we're like kids insisting that this log has more clay than the ball. We think we have more or better consciousness than anything else in the universe. We think we're the only intelligence, when intelligence is all around us. I see the Copernican Revolution as being about using the evidence of the world to point to deeper truths than what we simply feel is true by looking at the surface of things. The whole point of supporting the Copernican Revolution is to realize something else besides the Earth, something else besides me, something else is at the center. Of course, we must be aware of our own personal needs and our wants and what's happening for us, as well as our neighbors and our country, our friends, our enemies, our entire species, all of life. There's so many interlocking, interpenetrating things. The revolution is realizing that we can only make sense of things in frames. Frames make sense within the frame, but they don't make sense outside the frame. Outside the frame, something else is happening. Just like the orbits of the planets can look like retrograde or ellipses or spirals, there's no true way to see the motion of a planet. There's only the point of view that we see it from. But it doesn't feel that way from inside a particular point of view, from inside a particular frame. It feels like our beliefs are absolutely true, but they can't be. There's always a frame when beliefs arise, and there's always outside the frame where those beliefs fall apart. That's why we need to separate belief from faith, which I'm going to get to in a different episode. I'm just saying for now, look at the world, of course, look at the world from within your frame. How else can you see it? But always know, there's some other point of view where all the things that really seem true, all those things can be seen from another angle. Support the Copernican revolution. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. Please visit the home of the 10 Crutches podcast at 10crutches.link. That's 10crutches.link. The book that inspired the podcast, a book I wrote called 10 Crutches for Walking in the Present, is available for free download on the website. While you are there, please take advantage of two ways to contact me. You can send me an email, or you can make a voice recording. If you have a great question, I may be able to use it for the podcast. Also on the website, you can visit the archive to hear any published episode and see show notes for any and every show. Thanks so much for listening. And once again, thanks so much for listening. And I won't say it once again. See you next time.